And welcome to another fun-filled episode of That 401k Podcast. It's Ari along with Dan. Dan, how are you?
I am doing great, sir. How are you?
I can't complain. I mean, I could, but nobody would listen. I mean,
no one would listen.
The 25 people who listen to this podcast.
Except for maybe our listeners.
It was funny. I got a call from, sorry about that. And of course, and here's a funny, that was kind of funny because all of a sudden it shows that my phone is ringing and then it wasn't ringing. But
right in the middle of the podcast, the concert broke out.
Exactly. Cause, everybody knows I got to play Aerosmith on my phone. But anyway, I got a phone call. It was pretty fun. It was from Ron Sellers, the advisor we know in Florida. And he's like, oh, you know, how do you recover from these events? And I said, I really don't know. Just, you know, you really got to be quick on your feet because there's always going to be another one, coming around. So, which, you know, reminds me that April the 12th will be in Atlanta, Georgia for that 401k conference at SunTrust Park in Atlanta. That's going to be a lot of fun. May 3rd is also going to be a lot of fun in Kansas City. June 14th in Denver. October 11th will be in Foxborough. And we're looking at some events for September, November, December, and maybe something for next year already too. So, I've been adding a lot of plan provider sponsors last couple of days, and attendance is picking up, especially for the Atlanta event. People are signing up. So go to that 401ksite.com, sign up, and all that kind of stuff.
Join the movement, guys.
Yeah,
we're coming to a town near you.
Yeah, you know, Tampa Bay was, St. Pete was interesting. A lot of dust in the, Rays dugout. We had a lot of fun with Wade Boggs, great guest, probably one of our better guests. Not that we've ever had a bad guest, but really honest, made him cry twice. Not on purpose, but very emotional guy. Talk about Tom Seaver and talk about the time that one of my favorite wrestlers, Mr. Perfect, saved his life. So it was a great great time had by all.
It was, and I'll add the 2 minute dissertation that Mr. Boggs shared with me on hitting and launch angles confused the hell out of me, but it definitely illustrated why he has the highest batting average among living Hall of Famers.
Yeah, unfortunately Tony Gwynn and Ted Williams aren't around anymore, but he'll take it as he can get it.
328. That's pretty impressive.
Right. So this week's episode, we're going to talk about important tasks that many 401k plan sponsors ignore. Random, really important plan fiduciary, plan sponsor tasks that really plan sponsors really don't pay attention to. That's based on an article I wrote not too long ago. But really, it starts off with, when I was a kid in the 70s, I usually consider myself a kid of the 70s and the 80s. I don't know why, but I was born in 72, and I remember the disco era, so that maybe that's why I say I'm a kid of the 70s. But in the 70s and the early 80s, there was a really big push that everybody should know their blood pressure. Like, that was a really big deal. And then, of course, now, today, it's, what's your cholesterol level? There's so many tasks and tests and parts of a retirement plan that plan sponsors really ought to know, but they don't. I think that, right off the bat, plan sponsors really don't do a good job of reviewing their plan, and especially reviewing their plan providers. They assume that everything is going well, especially if their providers tell them everything is going well. And unfortunately, they discover that things aren't going so well. So, one of the things that I always say is plan sponsors need to be proactive rather than reactive. They can't sit around and wait for something to break because, for all I know, it's actually been broken.
Sure.
And, that's the case whether they hire these 338 and 316 fiduciaries. They're still on the hook for liability for actually hiring these providers. But ultimately, a plant sponsor that's really up to their task and reviewing what's going on with their plan is going to be in a better situation than someone that assumes everything goes to plan. Too many plan errors and omissions are discovered usually years later on a government audit or when there's a change of the TPA and all of a sudden you discover where the bodies are buried. So, you know, just something is reviewing annually the plan administration and, you know, obviously the work of the plan providers goes a long way to keeping the plan sponsor out of harm's way.
Sure. I mean, I think two points sort of jumped into my head as you were talking there, Ari. The first one is, I think part of, or a big part of the problem that plan sponsors face, and one of the reasons, aside from, you know, basic inertia, that there isn't a whole lot of productivity, is they genuinely don't know what to look for. I don't think plan sponsors are educated in that regard. And I'm not sure, you know, I've seen any kind of movement in that direction. But I think that's a big part of the problem.
Right.
You know, so that's something to sort of consider going forward. And then the other thing that popped into my head, to your point about doing a review, and this is one of the things that me and you were talking about earlier, and I'll throw in a shameless plug here for you. The tune-up, the plan tune-up, I mean, that's a great way to have something documented that plan sponsors can point to that say, hey, I had a disinterested third party kick the tires on our program here, and, you know, this is what came up. This is what didn't come up. You know, we talk about process ad nauseum. Every fiduciary that we talk to, whether it's a 338 or 316, like we do, or like we are, rather, they all speak about the importance of process. We've spoken about it ourselves. You know, so what's the best way to sort of shore up that latent exposure that plan sponsors have when they do sign or employ the services of a professional fiduciary? Is the need to review what those fiduciaries are doing. And again, I think a great way to accomplish that is by, you know, getting a document written, produced, something like the plan tune-up would be ideal for that.
Yeah, I mean, the plan tune-up, like I always say, you know, I said it last week in St. Pete as part of my presentation where I, of course, talk about the movie Airplane and talk about ERISA services because, you know, there's so much crossover, but in terms of the plan tune-ups, you know, I've touted them. I've touted them when I was at that Meyer Swazi, that semi-prestigious law firm in Long Island. So it's almost like 10 years I've been touting it, and I can probably count on, you know, two hands how many I've done because plan sponsors really don't want to pay the $750, even if it comes out of plan assets. Because it's like the family relative I have who doesn't go to the doctor because, you know, if you go to the doctor, that means you're sick. So, you know, there are a lot of plan sponsors with that mentality. If I don't see the ERISA attorney or if I don't have my plan reviewed, then there's nothing wrong with my plan. But if I go to them, then there's going to be something wrong with my plan. And quite honestly, most of the tune-ups I have, there really isn't anything wrong. But for the few that there are, you know, at least you learn about these problems before they become bigger and bigger. In terms of process, you know, one thing I want to point out is I saw this week Disney – beat back a lawsuit. They had an investment in the Sequoia Fund, which apparently has gone down in considerably value, and there was a plaintiff suing in a lawsuit. And the courts threw it out, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed because showing that a investment losing money isn't in and of itself a fiduciary breach, showing that you're keeping the investment in place and it was inconsistent with your investment policy statement or inconsistent with what you're doing as a fiduciary, only then are you going to be held liable. So process is really the biggest thing that a plan sponsor really needs to follow. And I think a process of reviewing their plan is obviously really important in limiting their liability as a plan fiduciary. And that's the same with plan fees. You know, we live in an environment now since 2012 with fee disclosure regulations. Everybody's got the fee disclosures. And how many plan sponsors simply put those fee disclosures in the back of the drawer and that's it?
Yep. Scan them. Put them, you know, save them on the cloud. do something with them, but make sure there's a, you know, a file.
Right. You know, it's, you know, the idea that you can just, you know, put in the back of the drawer, you really can't. And, you know, looking at feeds, you know, unless you really benchmark the fees that the plan sponsor's been charged with what other people are charging, a plan sponsor really can't have no understanding whether they're overpaying or not. You know, many years ago, my wife and I used a contractor. I wasn't a big fan of theirs. My wife was until they walked off the job right after Hurricane Sandy. And we didn't realize they were expensive until they had to do work after Hurricane Sandy and they wanted like $15,000 to remove remove sheetrock and just spackle. And there was like no paint, nothing. I'm like, that's a lot of money for sheetrock for, you know, downstairs, which maybe might have been 750 or 1,000 square feet. Just seemed to be a lot of money. And so then, you know, we got into a fight with them. They walked off the job. We hired somebody else. And for, you know, comparable money, we got a lot more and fixed it. And, you know, it's if I overpay on my home improvements, it's on me. But when you're a plan fiduciary and you're overpaying using plan assets, that's on the plan fiduciary. In terms of liability, you have to be, as a plan fiduciary, be more careful with somebody else's money than you are with your own. And so that's why it's important that plan sponsors actually take these fee disclosures, take it around, and actually see what other people charge. And, you know, obviously, plan sponsors need to understand that they don't have to pick the cheapest provider, but they have to pick somebody that's, you know, they have to look at what's the fee for a comparable service. And it's really important they do that because plan fiduciaries have that fiduciary duty of paying reasonable plan expenses. And how could you know if you really don't shop the plan around?
Yeah, absolutely. What is it, every 2-3 years? 3 years, I think, is the...
Well, it really depends on the plan size. Awesome. At the very least, it's got to be every 3 years. For a bigger plan, I think it should be every year. That's just my 2 cents. But, you know, it's really important. And, of course, another task that plan sponsors really don't take advantage of is purchasing fiduciary liability insurance. I think that any plan out there with that's covered under ERISA, meaning basically they have employees under the plan, while they're not required like they are with a fidelity bond, I think it's really important that they purchase fiduciary liability insurance to protect the fiduciaries for any liability that may come result of running the plan. I've run into too many times where, you know, they're plan sponsors that don't have it and they get sued. And I've been in a big situation with a client of mine many years ago. It was a big union. They had $1 million in legal fees against them for a class action lawsuit. They actually won the case, and thankfully they had fiduciary liability policy, so they're only on the hook for $100,000. Now, had they had no policy in place, they'd be on the hook for $1 million. So it's important that plan sponsors, in addition to the fidelity bonds, that are legally required ERISA bond, that they also get fiduciary liability insurance. Because, you know, you're going to protect when you're dealing with personal liability possibly or, you know, just, you know, the general cost of litigation. So, again, my client won the lawsuit but still had $1 million in legal fees. It's important that the plan sponsor purchase fiduciary liability insurance.
Yeah, and it's dirt cheap. I mean, you can get it relatively inexpensively. It looked like, too, though, from the article, Ari, that there was still the $100,000 deductible. So let's not – I don't want to paint the picture that I guess all was well. In that situation, the client was still out $100,000, right?
They're still out $100,000, but it would have been, you know, obviously –
it would have been a ton worse. Right. A ton worse.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the idea is just don't commit the first – you know, don't have the first issue. It was an excessive fee. Situation, right?
Yes, it was.
So there should have been ample visibility in terms of getting that fixed before it led to litigation.
Yeah, exactly. So next on our list, on my list, is hiring an advisor. or, it's important that not only hire an advisor, they actually also have to hire an advisor that actually understands 401k plans. I mean, there are still plan sponsors out there with 401k plans where they don't have an advisor on the plan. You know, I always talk about the story with my old law firm where they didn't have an advisor until I talked to them. And, of course, they went with the advisor that I didn't recommend because, you know, associates need to know their place. But it's important that not only that plan sponsors hire an advisor for their plan, it's also important that they hire an advisor who actually understands 401k plans. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we used to have these, you know, I used to call them Barney Fife 401k advisors, meaning, you know, Barney Fife on the Andy Griffith Show had, one bullet in his pocket, which was never loaded. The gun was never loaded, but he had one bullet in his pocket. So I always think of the advisor that only has one 401k plan on the books. Dealing with the fiduciary concerns and dealing with the whole aspect of trying to minimize liability for a participant-directed 401k plan, it's important that a plan sponsor hire, actually, an advisor that knows what a 401k plan is and knows about these fiduciary issues and knows what a TPA does and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, hiring somebody who doesn't know anything about 401k plans is just, you know, the same to me as hiring somebody like me who has no securities license as the advisor. You need somebody who's got the training in the background to actually handle 401k plans.
Undoubtedly. We joke about this all the time, but it's true. I don't think anyone in this industry went to school, with the exception of maybe an ERISA attorney, went to school to do this, right? It's sort of a career folks, you know, have drop upon them, they land into. You start in one direction, you end up finding yourself in the defined contribution space. So you definitely don't want to find. I had a philosophy teacher back in college that called folks that dabbled in things dilettantes. You don't want a dilettante here. You want somebody that is a committed practitioner. That understands the complexity and the innumerable moving parts to a compliant, well-run retirement plan, right? I mean, there should be a way to keep score of stuff. Plan participation, you question plans that have low participation, what's the advisor doing? Plans that you see consistently contributions on. I mean, they're telltale signs of plans not being properly run.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week, we talked about enrollment meetings. I mean, if you have an advisor who doesn't know anything about 401k plans, well, how are they going to know how to run an enrollment meeting? And that's one of the important tasks that I think that's been given short shrift over the past, 20 years.
Agreed. Time to, start advocating for change in that regard.
Exactly. So, next on my list, of course, is understanding what a TPA does. Now, if you go onto my LinkedIn file, whatever, if you go to teespring.com, there's actually a T-shirt. It says something like I've been selling this T-shirt. Actually, I had like two people actually bought it. It says, I'm the TPA. I do most of the work. I get none of the credit. I get all of the blame. And I think it's important that plan sponsors realize what a TPA does and what a good TPA does, TPAs are responsible for compliance testing, accounting, reconciliation of trades, tax reporting, other, plan functions, depending on what the TPA does. It can be drafting the plan document, all that kind of stuff. And, TPA does so much more of the work. They also can cause most of the errors dealing with, plan administration. So it's important that a plan sponsor know what TPA does with plan design, with plan administration, with record keeping, and understand the value of a good one. And, people don't pick a doctor based on price, but, somehow they pick a TPA on price. They don't pick a lawyer on price. They don't say, oh, this guy is $99 an hour, I'll go to him instead of the person who's $250. Plan sponsors need to know that they can't pick a TPA just on price. They have to pick a TPA on service and price. And it's important to hire a TPA who actually knows what the heck they're doing. That's a really important thing. And I think the plan sponsors really need to focus and understand, you know, what a TPA does and what's the nature of the business and, you know, how they could keep a plan sponsor out of trouble and how they could put a plan sponsor in trouble.
It's the same old argument, right? We had this for the longest time. We overreacted as an industry, and all we thought about was cost, and sort of lost sight of all the other things that form, you know, the definition of good value. And I think it's important to remember that, right? I mean, be leery of paying too little. Things have value, intrinsic value, and good advice, better advice, you know, competent advice, folks that perform, you know, are entitled to charging a little bit more, right? Than folks that aren't good at their job.
Right. Exactly. And it's really important that they, you know what these guys do. So it's, you know, really, really important. I can't, you know, say enough. Next is one thing that I'd never seen a plan sponsor do. I mean, I think it happens, but actually talking to employees and asking about the 401k plan and what they like about it, what they don't like about it. I've never worked for a company that did that, and I've yet to see a company actually do that, and I'm sure that there are, especially the companies that have employees on some of these plan committees. But, you know, I think too many plan sponsors forget why they put the plan in the first place. It's an employee benefit. It's, you know, it's like health insurance and the holiday party and my joke about milk with coffee. It's a benefit. And it's used to recruit and retain employees, yet, you know, I've never seen a plan sponsor actually ask employees what, you know, what do they think about the plan? Is it good? Is it bad? Do you like the TPA? Do you like the sign-up process? Do you like the website? And nobody seems to do that. I just, you know, I don't know about your experience, Dan, but I've never had that experience.
Nor have I. Nor have I. I mean, it might be at best, I mean, when I was a consultant at Willis, you know, I've seen a throw-in question at the end of you know, a benefit sort of survey monkey that's gone out on a couple of occasions. But, you know, outside of some incredibly generic question, no.
Yeah.
I mean, the funny thing is the plan is there for participants. So you probably should solicit their input.
Right. Exactly. But I've never seen it actually happen. And, I, you know, I always say communication is key and communication is extremely important. And I'm just shocked that, you know, I have yet to see a plan sponsor actually interact with the employees and see what they think about the 401k plan, about the investments, about the website, about the enrollment meetings. It's like they don't want the input. And I think that that's really awful in the sense that, you know, these things are put in place to retain and recruit employees. It's an extremely important benefit. And, you know, it's just shocking that plan sponsors don't really do that. So, you know, you learn something new every day. But I'm just surprised that, you know, they just don't do it and have never bothered to think that they should. And I think that, you know, when you get input, that's a great way to improve things. And that could go a long way with increasing plan participation and retaining employees. So I'm just, again, it's a shocker to me that most plan sponsors just don't bother.
Yeah, well, especially you brought up the point of, you know, retention. In an unemployment market that's around 3%, I mean, you know, you want to be able to attract and retain the talent you have.
Right.
In terms of things that I learned recently, I had no idea that both Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking were born on Pi Day.
I had no idea.
Nor did I. How ironic. Stephen Hawking went as far as having the, I guess, the grace or the good fortune to also die on Pi Day. He died on the same day he was born.
That's really interesting. I never thought about it.
I learned that yesterday, yeah. On Pi Day, coincidentally. a vastly underappreciated holiday.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, but you know, not big on math, so never really. I don't, you know, when I was in high school, I don't remember it being a thing.
Pi Day? Oh no, no, no! It's a recent development. It's kind of like May the Force be a Star Wars Day.
Yeah, that's a new thing too. You know, and I really don't celebrate it, even though I'm a big Star Wars fan.
I don't remember to celebrate.
Yeah, I know, I know. I just, you know, I have the holiday of Purim next week, so I have to pick out which costume to wear.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I have so many costumes. One. Yeah, my synagogue is doing a whole Disney thing, so I guess I'll dress up as a Star Wars character. But I was really, you know, I really wanted to dress up as Al Chervik from Caddyshack. I have that costume.
It sounds like a blast, bud.
Yeah, we'll see. But anything you want to add to our topic for this week?
I guess the one point, maybe a little bit of a shameless plug, going back to fiduciary insurance, somewhere between fiduciary insurance and hiring competent professionals, I think would be remiss if I didn't suggest the importance of hiring a 316. If the plan sponsor has a hard time understanding what the service providers do, they probably have an equally hard time understanding, the perils of trying to keep the program compliant. So I would definitely suggest that. Doesn't have to by any means be us, but definitely look into hiring a 316 and specifically one that in writing absorbs as many plan sponsor liabilities as possible. And then the second thing, and this was something that we had spent, I want to say, the large part of a previous podcast on, was 404C compliance. I venture to say most plan sponsors have no idea what that is. It's a very valuable piece of the code. It does sort of give plan sponsors some latitude, let's call it, some safe harbor from any liability associated with losses from the investments that are selected for the plan, if certain things are complied with. We all know the first two are generally easy to comply with. It's that third one, that education piece, that I dare say is poorly complied with, if complied with at all. And then I would pay attention to making sure that that's addressed.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's a great idea. You know, it's just surprising. You know, we'll get old and gray, but you know, some of us already are old and gray, and we color it. But
I wasn't gonna say anything.
Oh, so I color my hair. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But the fact is that plan sponsors really, you know, they really still to this day don't, you know, most of them don't understand the tasks that are at hand for them as plan fiduciaries. And it's going to be a never ending battle to finally make them understand what their role is and what their responsibilities is. So as they say, that's that. So everybody, don't forget the conferences that are coming up. Go to that 401ksite.com. And I'm sure Dan and I will have some, hopefully soon to talk about our next project.
Very soon.
Yes, hopefully.
Very soon.
So until next week, it's Dan and I signing off. Take care.
Have a good weekend.